Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show from the Labatt Blue Studio. Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light. Bleed blue and white, drink blue and light. And don't forget to try the new Labatt Blue Light Seltzer Variety Pack, available at retailers throughout Pennsylvania.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Dustin Hawkinsmith. Dustin, are you all ready for the NFL Draft edition of the Keystone Kickoff Show?
I was born ready for this, Jim. And good weekend for Penn State. Got a lot to talk about on this one.
We really do. And in some ways, I think I'm a bigger fan of the NFL Draft than I am of the NFL. It's so much fun leading up to it. I'm addicted to the mock drafts. There's the rooting interest with the Penn State players. And yes, I do have a rooting interest with the Eagles. So a lot of fun, a lot of interesting stuff. Let's get it started right at the very top. And that was with Micah Parsons going number 12 to the Dallas Cowboys, the hated Dallas Cowboys. Isn't that part of their name? Their official name.
Yeah, well, I mean, your Eagles made a trade with the hated Dallas Cowboys to swap up and change picks there.
And it was one of those things that I do think it benefited both teams. But let's go at this from the Penn State angle, which is Micah Parsons. And Dustin, leading up to the draft, I'm not sure there was a more polarizing pick in the first round as far as where he was going to go. And so any surprise here, number 12 to the Cowboys?
I thought number 12 was a realistic best-case scenario, and it has nothing to do with Micah. Like, I think Micah's game is outstanding. I think everybody who's talking about character issues and wondering why, you know, such a bad kid, like, I think all that was overblown, to say the very least. And everything in the run-up to the draft is overblown. Let's be honest about that. The mock draft, everything. Justin Fields, all the criticism about him was completely overblown. So that's just kind of the name of the game. But I thought with him, you know, being a guy who probably projects as a true linebacker, depending on what scheme you're looking at, could be inside, could be outside, but a true linebacker, not an edge rusher, you know, and that distinction is an important one for the draft because the position itself doesn't get prioritized. And it happens every single year, even with mock drafts. You see three positions, I think, that move up because they're at such a premium. Quarterback, obviously. And you saw, you knew that was going to be part of the theme of this draft. But I think offensive tackle, it happens a lot. And I think cornerback, it happens a lot. So Micah was, I thought, was going to slip outside of the top 10 because I thought the two cornerbacks, Patrick Surtain the second from Alabama and J.C. Horn from South Carolina, weren't going to slip too far because teams needed that. They recognized that those were the top two corners in the draft. So Micah slipped, I thought, probably right around 10 or 12 is going to make sense. And it turns out, you know, from Dallas's perspective, they were looking at Micah at pick number 10, felt good enough that they could still get him and move back a couple spots, pick up an extra pick or two and pull the trigger at number 12. I think a really good marriage between player personality and that big, bold, you know, the big Texas franchise. So I thought a good pairing for Micah Parsons at 12. A good situation to walk into. They invested a lot, Dallas did, in defense in this draft because their defense last season was unacceptable. So now they get a guy and Micah who can kind of roam and make plays. They have some options now at that linebacker spot. Sean Lee retired. Micah comes in and follows on his heels there.
Exactly. And I'm with you also on, I thought these character concerns were pretty bogus also. And I don't know if that's teams throwing that out there to mislead people, you know, what their interests are. If that is the case, that's unfair to the player. It's totally and completely unfair. And yeah, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, I think, you know, character concerns, I mean, they can come from a couple places. One is Micah as a high school kid who, you know, he had some sort of incident when he was at Central Dolphin High, ended up at Harrisburg High. I think it was just sort of an immature kind of thing that happened on his part. So there was that. There was also just his sort of personality in the recruiting process and the fact that he soaked up everything. Micah Parsons soaked up every little bit of attention from the recruiting process, and it alienated and rubbed some people the wrong way. I get that. And then there's the Isaiah Humphries, the civil suit, where, you know, not to say that anything that's ever written in civil suits is unfounded, but you can say anything. You can make any accusation, any allegation, and it doesn't have to be founded or not. You can say just about anything you want. And I think that's the basis, I think, for a lot of people. And a lot of criticism now for Parsons is based off that, which, you know, it, like I said, you can say anything you want about the kid. So I feel like, you know, from what we saw of Micah Parsons, I think he's matured a lot. I think, you know, he's got sort of like a childlike demeanor about him, but not like an immature. I think he just enjoys life, and you can see it.
And I think you also have to take a look at James Franklin with all of this too, that if this was someone who had some maturity issues or whatever coming out of high school, which, let's face it, when you're in high school, that's part of the whole process, is the immaturity, right? James Franklin guides his players to, here you have Micah Parsons. He graduated, right? In 3 years. So yeah. This is a kid who, if you had questions coming out of Penn State, what you have is someone who's already graduated college, did it in 3 years, and we know how James Franklin is about these players attending class, doing all the right things. So not only good for Micah, but also I think good for James Franklin to guide him along this path. And, you know, a number 12 pick, I'll be rooting against him every time he plays the Eagles. Other than that, though, I think he's going to have a huge career. I did want to ask you also one last thing on the positional value. I get the quarterback, left tackle, cornerback. The game of football, whether college or NFL, it's a passing game. Those positions are important. But at linebacker, Micah Parsons isn't just that guy who's stopping a run stuffer. I mean, this is a guy who could change a game. We've seen that at Penn State. I would put a lot of value at that.
And I think the NFL is going to start. I think this could be a new era when it comes to the linebacker position in the NFL. You saw how important that was with Tampa Bay having Devin White and Lavonte David, having these agile, fast, you know, guy, rangy linebackers who can do all kinds of things. And Micah Parsons fits in that category. Coming into the league, I don't think you could say for certain that he could be a dominant pass rusher. I don't think you could say for certain that he was a dominant, you know, drop and play and coverage linebacker. So you had to project a little bit when it came to those premium skills, but I don't think it required all that much projection. I feel like if Micah played in the 2020 season, he would have had 7 or 8 sacks. You know, coming off of what he did in the Cotton Bowl, his last game as a college player, I thought that foreshadowed a huge year coming up where he would have answered any of these remaining questions and maybe been viewed a little bit differently. I think you're going to see him make a difference in both of those areas really, really fast in Dallas.
I think you're right. And speaking of sacks and being a difference maker on defense, Jason Owe, number 31, first round to the Baltimore Ravens. A lot of question whether he would go in the first round or not. Good for him that he did. And is this another case of, you know, his pro day? There was no combine, but his pro day got him into the first round.
I think it did. You know, I think his tools are premium tools. They are things that cannot be taught. I think the relative lack of production, the lack of sacks, I think it can be written off easily, especially from a franchise like the Ravens, who, you know, you give them the type of talent that Owe has, and I think they've got a long-standing reputation that they're going to get the most out of it. Organizationally, structure-wise, they are true blue to their identity. I think it's a really good spot for Jason Owe to land in, where he'll be asked to play and make a difference right away. And I think he's still got to grow and evolve and build up his pass rush arsenal and be able to get to the quarterback. I'm interested to see what all the else they're going to ask him to do, because clearly athletically he can do all that stuff. I suspected as we got near the end here that we would see Jason Elway go at the end of the first round. And this was an interesting draft class for edge rushers, because from my vantage point, every single guy who fell under that edge rusher category had some kind of pretty significant question to answer. Jason Elway didn't have to answer questions about what he can do physically, but he did have to answer questions about his ability to get to the quarterback. But, you know, you look at every single edge rusher in this draft, they all slipped a little bit because there were no real sure things. So in this draft environment, why not take a flyer on Jason Elway late in the first round?
Are we overstating that issue of zero sacks last year? Remember, it was a shortened season, plus he missed games because of some injuries. Are we all overstating the zero sacks?
I mean, again, everything gets overstated in the run-up to the draft. Every single thing. But seeing that zero, it is something that has to be answered for. I think my theory on it is basically, yes, Jason Elway missed time. It was not an ordinary year. I thought he was transitioning from a guy who was coming into the game with only that responsibility in mind to get to the passer the first 2 years where he played, you know, bit roles. I thought he was growing into and adding more responsibility to this game. I thought he did a really nice job against the run. I thought he developed some more inside-outside pass rush moves. I just thought it was circumstance, too. So, of course it got overblown. That key category, when you talk about an edge rusher, you have to explain why there's a zero in that category. You just have to. And then you throw in, you know, all the – it's silly season for the NFL draft. Of course it was going to get overblown. But I think Elway is going to be a really, really good player at the next level.
I do too. And how important was it that he went to an organization like Baltimore?
Yeah, I mean, if you're a late first rounder, you're going to go to a winning organization for almost every single time. So, but for Baltimore, it's defense oriented. They have a history of being able to get the most out of guys just like this. They have a really consistent and steady and really good coach. They have a good organizational structure. I mean, this is a really good spot for Jason Elway. You kind of can't go wrong if you're going 28 through 32. But Baltimore, with their reputation and what they do and what they're going to ask Elway to do, Wink Martindale, really good coordinator. It's a good spot for him, absolutely.
Plus, he's a good game show host, that Martindale guy.
It's true. Wink.
Okay. That is it for quarter number one, but we are not done talking about the draft. There are still more Penn State players that went in the draft, starting with Pat Freiermuth. We're going to talk about him and the rest of the Penn State draftees in quarter number two, so stick with us.
In a world of over 100 hard seltzers swimming in a sea of sameness and mediocrity, a hero emerges. Introducing Seagram's Hard Seltzer, the greatest of all time. So go ahead, awaken your taste buds and bring the thrill back to bubbles with fruit-infused flavor combinations that are refreshingly new and deliciously different. Seagram's Hard Seltzer. Kick it with the goat.
Flavored malt beverages. Enjoy responsibly. The Seagram Beverage Company, Rochester, New York.
Hi, this is Dustin Hawkinsmith from the Keystone Sports Network. For the best Penn State football analysis and commentary, go to KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. The rest of the KSN team and I will bring you game reviews, player evaluation, recruiting news, and plenty more. You may even hear directly from some of your favorite recruits. That's KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. You can also take Keystone Sports Network with you. Go to your app store and download Keystone Sports for your mobile device. For Penn State football news 52 weeks a year, count on the Keystone Sports Network.